Perry Bacon is political editor for The Griot and an MSNBC contributor, and Peter Suderman is the senior editor at Reason Magazine. Thanks, guys, for joining me.
Good to see you.
It's the boys club today, minus me. Now, Senator-elect Elizabeth Warren pledged to lead the charge for filibuster reform, writing on her blog, quote, "Voters want political leaders who are willing to break the partisan gridlock. They want fewer closed-door roadblocks and more public votes on legislation that could improve their lives." She says she's joined by all incoming Democratic senators. So, Perry, this question's for you. Is this an idea whose time has come?
I think it has. You've seen that Harry Reid, who's a longtime senator and traditionally someone who likes the Senate rules as they've been, he's opposed filibuster reform in the past, but he's now jumped on board and said, it's time. And you're seeing a lot of other veteran Democratic senators. The new ones being for this is not surprising, but you're seeing old Democratic senators who've been in the minority before now saying, this is the time. The big issue is not just bills, which is Ari was talking about, but also like nominees. You saw like President Obama couldn't appoint anyone virtually to even low-level post during his first term because Mitch McConnell was virtually blocking people for assistant secretaries of all kinds of jobs, which is kind of unprecedented in Washington and which Democrats are really, really worried about.
Now, Ari, The Hill reports that as of this week, Democrats don't have enough votes for reform. So is this idea actually dead on arrival?
I don't think it's dead on arrival at all. I do think it's true that these issues are often treated initially as partisan matters. There is something different going on. There is a big conversation, as we know, in the Republican Party about what kind of party they want to be, how they bounce back from this election, and how they continue to integrate the Tea Party, which I think is less committed to some of these old traditions as compared to the establishment. I mean, Perry hit on it. Having new senators interested isn't always the issue. The issue is a coalition of the new and getting other people to change their minds. It's really key to have that kind of reform. And I think there's an opening here for some Republicans to actually say they want full floor votes. They don't want Congress to just be blocking.
Now, Peter, Jonathan Bernstein in The Washington Post predicts that the talking filibuster would be a flop, writing, quote, "Republicans would take to the floor and start arguing for the bill. Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, and the rest of the Republican-aligned media would treat them as heroes. The result? Republicans would be stacked up in line to deliver ringing denunciations of the offending legislation, stocked with the latest talking points. Remember, there's no need to read from the phone book or recite recipes when there are transcripts of Glenn Beck's show or your favorite conservative blogger to deliver." So, Peter, what do you make of that assessment?
I think we have certainly seen that Republicans in the Senate especially have been willing to find loopholes and exploit them to their advantage. Whenever they can find loopholes in the rules, they've taken advantage of them. I don't actually think there's anything particularly wrong with that. The rules are the rules. You make use of them as they are. But the thing to remember here, I think, that that's been overlooked a little bit is that when Democrats were in the minority in the Senate, they were very wary of reforming the filibuster. Joe Biden said that filibuster reforms were about the arrogance of power. And Harry Reid said that reforming the filibuster was a bad idea because it was sort of the last protection on individual rights. It was the last protection against abuses of power in Washington. And if Democrats try this now, then there's a good chance it could come back to bite them again in the future when they are inevitably at some point in the minority.
You know, Mara, just real quickly, I think the point you raise about Bernstein is a good one. It depends on the issue. I mean, if you're filibustering, for example, Obamacare, there's no doubt that a lot of the Republican grassroots would rally behind it, and I think that'd be good for democracy. I'm not talking about eliminating the entire rule, but again, to pick up on something Perry said, if you're talking about shutting down all of Congress during a recession so you can filibuster a nominee to an administrative position that no one's heard of, I'm not sure even Glenn Beck's going to get excited about that. That's where you get the tailspin, because a lot of regular people say, I can't believe this is what Congress, either party, this is what Congress wants to spend its time on.
All right, guys, stick around for me for 1 second. We're going to keep our brain trust around. And coming up next, who are these guys? A spirit of bipartisanship breaks out at the White House. But is it the real thing, and will it lead to a real deal to avoid the fiscal cliff? I'm back now with our Brain Trust panel. Ari Melber is an MSNBC contributor and correspondent for The Nation. Perry Bacon is political editor for The Griot and an MSNBC contributor. And Peter Suderman, senior editor at Reason Magazine. Thanks for joining me again, gentlemen. So after the meeting with the White House, the president yesterday said that we were meeting what seemed like a new Republican leadership. Let's take a listen.
To show our seriousness, we've put revenue on the table, as long as it's accompanied by significant spending cuts.
We're prepared to put revenue on the table, provided we fix the real problem.
Ari, are we seeing the beginning of a new era of bipartisanship here?
No. I don't think we are. There's two problems there from the sound you played, which was, I think, the right point to focus on. They said revenue, not necessarily taxes. We know, everyone who follows politics understands, the current sticking point on the tax plan is whether you want to deal with all the goodies that millionaires get or not. The president has said that's a red line. Republicans are gesturing some warmth towards it, but not really giving in yet. And that may be a legislative strategy that they think is going to work for them. I don't think it will, because I do think we are in a different world. We are in a post-Romney, post-mandate, post-November world. It is not a world that will be favorable to Republicans who want to take the economy hostage to help millionaires. So I think that's number one. Number two, more broadly, you know, you got to figure out whether or not these folks want to treat these deadlines as real or not. My suspicion here, having worked in Congress and followed these issues, and I'll be interested in what the panel thinks, is I don't think these deadlines are real. They weren't real last time. Sequestration and those issues can always be kicked down the road.
Ari, if I can just follow up on that, you know, this certainly, you say no, this is not a new era of bipartisanship, but it certainly seems much less acrimonious than when we were seeing the debt ceiling deal. So what's different now?
Well, I mean, I think the rhetoric hasn't gotten heated yet, although I'm not to be negative here on a beautiful weekend day, but there's a lot of time yet. I mean, I think what we're seeing right now is a desire to make some, you know, some gesture of cooperation right after the election. The test of bipartisanship is legislation, not words. And so the question will be whether the three men you just showed on screen, whether McConnell, Boehner, and the president can ultimately get a deal on legislation. And that's why I'm not optimistic about the bipartisanship, nor do I think it has to be very bipartisan. I just think it has to get done.
Now, Peter, I want to read you something that the Wall Street Journal wrote. Now, their editorial board suggested that the GOP should take a deal on budget negotiations, writing, "If Republicans don't blink and we go over the cliff, from the president's point of view, so what? Mr. Obama then has an excuse to blame Republicans if there's another recession. Meanwhile, he pockets the higher tax rates that take effect on January 1st anyway, and he can then negotiate a budget deal next year without having to make any tax concessions." Do you agree? Do you think Republicans should just take the deal and move on?
Well, I think there's two ways to interpret the results of the most recent election here. One is that Americans voted for bipartisanship because they voted for a divided Congress. The other, though, is that they voted for gridlock. They voted for a divided Congress here in which Republicans control the House and in which Republicans can act as a check on the Democratic agenda. Now, it suggests strongly that they weren't wholly on board with the Republican agenda and that they had big problems with it, and that's why they reelected Barack Obama as president. On the other hand, they did put Republicans back in charge, and that suggests that they want a check there and that they want Republicans to act like Republicans in the House.
Now, President Obama talked about his second term agenda during his news conference this week. Let's take a listen to what he had to say.
I want a big deal. I want a comprehensive deal. Right now, what I want to make sure of is the taxes on middle-class families don't go up. And there's a very easy way to do that. We could get that done by next week. I'm very confident that we can get immigration reform done. We can shape an agenda that says we can create jobs, advance growth, and make a serious dent in climate change and be an international leader. I think that's something that the American people would support.
Now, Perry, there may be room for agreement on at least one or two of those items, but how long do you expect cooperation to continue?
Immigration reform, I would take this issue by issue. Immigration reform, I think, will pass because the Republicans recognize they can't lose Latino vote by 40 points and can compete in politics. They need to do better on that issue. When I come back to the tax issue, as Ari said, I'm not optimistic either, and the reason is you look at what Boehner said. Boehner was for a deal last year. I mean, we have to figure out what does Eric Cantor think, what does Michelle Bachmann think, what does Rand Paul think. John Boehner is the leader of the Republican Party in name, but he often is not leading them in policy. And until we know, Obama's proposing $1 trillion in tax increases. I'm not sure that Rush Limbaugh is for that right now. And until we know that other conservatives outside of John Boehner support that idea, it's hard to see where the compromise is. So I think I'm not optimistic either about where we are right now.
Yeah, just to jump in, I mean, I would echo that. Sometimes we analyze these guys like Boehner's the CEO, and that may be the case, but he has a board of directors. He's got other stakeholders to deal with, and we've got to see some movement from them if that bipartisanship that you were talking about in the beginning, Mara, if that's going to go anywhere.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I would just point out that there was real skepticism about whether Boehner could deliver a deal with the debt ceiling fight. And his party, you know, did buck his leadership to some extent, but ultimately they came around.
And looking ahead to 2016, and Perry, you mentioned the gap in support with Hispanics, and we saw the same thing with African Americans and with Asian Americans. So what do you think the Republicans need to do to better position themselves for the next election?
I think immigration reform is an issue that they're already working on. You saw Boehner is already making different remarks about that. Mostly, I think you're going to see the difference in tone. Did you see, you noticed this week, Mitt Romney makes this comment that was obviously not the right thing to say, and basically a repetition of the 47% remark he made earlier, and you saw Bobby Jindal jumped on him, but not just that, but so did like pretty much every Republican in Washington and elsewhere jumped on him. You're going to see a difference in tone from the Republicans, and I don't know if that'll work or not, but you're definitely going to see it, and you're already seeing the early signs of that.
So then, Peter, what's the first step in rebuilding the party?
I think the first step in rebuilding the party is distancing itself from its last nominee, but also distancing itself from George W. Bush. And this has been a big problem for the Republicans, is that they've always been a sort of loyalist party that sticks by their guys. That was a big problem for Mitt Romney. It really sort of contained him and, you know, constrained what he could do because he could never really say anything bad about George Bush. The party right now is, you know, is actually taking good first steps in distancing itself from a nominee who didn't do the job, didn't get it done, and they need to find something new.
All right, guys, stick with me if you will. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, why 2016 just got a little bit closer to reality this week. You're watching MSNBC, the place for politics. I'm back now with the Brain Trust panel, Ari Melber, an MSNBC contributor and correspondent for The Nation, Perry Bacon, political editor for The Griot and an MSNBC contributor, and Peter Sitterman of Reason Magazine. Thanks for coming back, guys.
Thanks.
So this week, Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal was one of the first Republicans to call out Mitt Romney for comments where he essentially said the voters allowed themselves to be bribed by Democrats. Watch.
We need to stop being the dumb party. We need to offer smart, conservative, intelligent ideas and policies. That's how we win elections. We don't win elections by insulting voters.
And next up, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. Let's take a look at what he had to say.
Do you agree with Bobby Jindal? It was a terrible thing to say, and it was said terribly?
Yeah, sure. You can't expect to be a leader of all the people and be divisive. Okay? You have to talk about themes, policies that unite people. And play to their aspirations and their goals and their hopes for their family and their neighbors. And I always hate this kind of scapegoating after elections. I mean, when you lose, you lost. Someone asked me the other day, why did Mitt Romney lose? I said, because he got less votes than Barack Obama. No. That's why.
All right, so that's Jindal, check one. Christie, check two for 2016. So, Perry, who else is possibly on this list?
I think, this is my firm belief, is that the Republican ticket will have a minority or a woman on the ticket, no matter what, in 2016. So I think that you saw Susana Martinez criticize the comment, the New Mexico governor. You saw Jindal. You see Marco Rubio's in Iowa today as well. I think this is a great move by Jindal to get himself in the front of that line, to be the first one saying, this party needs to expand, and I'm the person to help do that. And he was very aggressive and sort of set the bar for Republicans in terms of criticizing that remark. Very smart move by him.
And Ari, as Perry mentioned, Marco Rubio is already in Iowa. Is it possible that we're seeing potential candidates launching a four-year campaign?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think we have to read too much into it. We don't know who's going to run in the next election or the election after. We don't know 2016. We don't know 2020. And so if we spend too much time worrying about it, you know, we're just going to be reading the tea leaves of people's, you know, travel schedules. I think we can look to issues, though. And I think the issue that's going to animate the Republican Party going into 2016 will be both immigration and populism. What does it mean to have an inclusive country and a path to residency or citizenship, even if you hold more conservative views about how to get it done or how to regulate it? Mm-hmm. And then number two, what does it mean to be populist when we have long-term unemployment? No matter what this Congress does, no matter what the president does, we are in a new normal where we have a terrible ongoing jobs crisis. And so the question for both parties isn't, for starters, you know, who do you love? A lot of people love Barack Obama right now, but he's going to finish his term. A lot of people are loving, you know, certain guys and gals who might run. But the bottom line is, what are the ideas here that are going to empower populism? And as we discussed with you in the previous segment, I think a big one want is reforming the tax code so it's less tilted towards millionaires.
Okay, just Peter, I want to get to you. You get the last word on this. We're really short on time, but another possible 2016 candidate is Hillary Clinton. She's headed to Capitol Hill for Benghazi hearings. Is this the kind of attention that she wants right now?
Hillary Clinton is probably looking to avoid controversy at this point, but, you know, she's Secretary of the State. This is the job she has to do. Personnel is policy, and with these folks, you get to see what the administration has to offer, and it's right now it's Hillary Clinton.
All right, perfect timing. Ari, Perry, Peter, can't say that too fast. Thank you guys for your time this afternoon.